This is our number two.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
Oh, yeah. It's a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. Welcome to our Fastest 15. Oh, and I have one more I told you so. This has been a whole show of I told you so's today, because everything that we've been talking about the last several weeks and months is coming 100% true. You may recall when they started dropping rocks on I-5 and I-90. It started months ago. And after the first two incidents, I came on this radio show and I said, they have to clear these homeless encampments. That's where the rock throwers are coming from. It cannot be tolerated. People are going to die. They have to clear the encampments. And of course, the way their minds work, it's if Monson suggested that, even if it is the best idea, we're not going to do it. We're not going to give him a win. So they let people drop rocks on cars for a couple more months. People getting injured, cars being damaged. By the grace of God, nobody was killed. But guess what? A couple of weeks ago, they finally said, we got to clear the encampments. Guess what? Last 2 weeks, there have been no rock drop incidents on I-5 and I-90. It solved the problem. We knew that it would solve the problem 3 months ago. But they didn't act on it. They continued to risk lives. They continued to endanger the people that they are entrusted to protect. And it's just because they put the criminal, homeless, drug addicts on a much higher plane than they do the taxpaying, hardworking citizens who are just trying to go about their life. And why? Because they need them for the war. Remember, it's Marxism versus capitalism. It's a war out there. So, I got lots of I told you so's today. My goodness gracious. All right, let's dive into the fastest 15 here. Move on, talk about a few other things. Because Bill Gates has spoken out for really the first time in any kind of depth since his divorce was announced. The divorce went final just a day or two ago. But he talked with Anderson Cooper at CNN, and he said, I believe they were married 27 years, if I'm not mistaken. And he said that he was very sad that they could not make it work.
Definitely a very sad milestone. And Melinda's a great person, and that partnership that we had coming to an end is a source of great personal sadness. We are communicating and working at the foundation, and so that partnership we're going to try and continue.
We are communicating and we're going to try to continue. It doesn't sound like there's a lot of love there, that they can make that continue productively. Anderson Cooper, to his credit, also asked Bill Gates about his relationship with child rapist Jeffrey Epstein. Bill Gates went on Epstein's private jet, which is dubbed the Lolita Express. Bill Gates flew on that plane several times. He visited Epstein at Epstein's home many times. And this was after Jeffrey Epstein had been convicted of soliciting a child for sex. And so Anderson Cooper asked Bill Gates about why in the world he would hang out with Jeffrey Epstein.
Can you explain your relationship with Epstein? Did you have any concerns? Was there ever any concerns you had about it?
Oh, certainly. I had several dinners with him, hoping that what he said about getting billions of philanthropy for global health through contacts that he had might emerge. You know, when it looked like that wasn't a real thing, that relationship ended. But it was a huge mistake to spend time with him, to give him the credibility of, you know, being there. There were lots of others in that same situation, but I made a mistake.
Made a mistake. Here's what I just cannot understand about that. He knew that Epstein was a child rapist. why would Bill Gates have any reason to have social events with Jeffrey Epstein after that became known? And I'll give you just one small example from my personal life. I used to have a group of guys that I played football with every Monday night for about 10 years, from age 21 when I was a student at the University of Washington until into my early 30s. We would play every Monday night in the fall at Lower Woodland. And one of the guys that played with us, you know, we were always looking to have enough bodies because we would play a lot of four-on-four, so you need to get eight guys out there. And that got tougher and tougher as we were getting older. But one of the guys who'd been with us from the beginning, he knew a guy, a neighbor, and he said, you know, do you want me to invite my neighbor to play? Yeah, sure, absolutely. So the neighbor comes out and plays with us, and then I find out that this neighbor was a school counselor and had been accused by multiple children of inappropriate touching. You think I played football with that guy again? I mean, absolutely not. I didn't want to be within 500 miles of that guy. And we never did. And I told my friend, because I was kind of the organizer of the game, and I said, hey, he's not coming back, once I found out the news. Now, that's just me. I was a nobody kid who, I didn't have a reputation back then because nobody knew who I was. I was just a $6 an hour grunt for much of that time. But I knew, even though I didn't have a reputation that amounted to much of anything, but your life and your reputation is the sum total of all the decisions you make. And even then I knew there's no way I'd be around a guy like that. But Bill Gates, the richest man in the world, decided to hang out with a child rapist. I will never understand that. That makes absolutely no sense to me. And I know there are a lot of people who've asked questions about, well, did Jeffrey Epstein provide any girls, women for Bill Gates? I have no idea. I have no idea. But I cannot understand why Bill Gates would have risked his reputation and his marriage, because it was years and years ago when Melinda Gates found out about him being with Jeffrey Epstein, and that's when she first contacted a divorce lawyer. She didn't want her husband hanging out with a child rapist, allegedly, according to reports. So you risk your marriage. They had younger kids at the time, and you risk your reputation. For what? There was nothing that Jeffrey Epstein had that you couldn't have had on your own from a financial standpoint, Bill Gates. So it's very strange. It's never made any sense. And then Anderson Cooper asked Bill Gates about an affair.
Fortune said that your behavior at times created an uncomfortable workplace environment. I know a spokeswoman for you acknowledged you had an affair 20 years ago with a Microsoft employee that she said ended amicably. Do you have regrets?
Well, certainly I think everyone does. But, you know, it's a time of reflection, and, at this point I need to go forward. My work is very important to me. Within the family, we'll heal as best we can. And learn from what's happened.
Yeah, just a very strange decision-making from a guy who's got a lot of brain smarts and became the richest man in the world for a while. He's since been passed. Next up in the Fastest 15, I've gambled a fair amount in my life, but I'm always honest with my wife. If I lose, I tell her what I lost. You know, we're a partnership. I don't keep secrets from my wife. Not true of a guy in Bellevue, apparently. A Bellevue man called police, told them he had been robbed. And when the police came out to take the report about the robbery of this man, they found some holes in his story. The guy had called 911 at about 10:30 just a few nights ago, about a week ago. He said he was pulled over and looking to see how bad his car was damaged after hitting something in the road. He then claimed somebody walked up to him, demanded he get on the ground and give up his wallet. The suspect took the man's cash and left while the man waited 5 minutes before calling for help. The police said, nothing in your story makes sense. What really happened? And that's when the man admitted he had lost all his money at the casino that night. And he faked the robbery as an excuse for his wife. And now he's under investigation for false reporting. I'm guessing his wife has some serious questions for him as well. Next up in the Fastest 15, Nicole, I've not seen this one yet, but it's Ron DeSantis, the Florida governor, who has been in the crosshairs of The View and media people because he's a super spreader. But what leads up to what we're about to listen to here?
Well, I think a lot of us have been hearing this, but they're getting some flack down in Texas and Florida because they have lifted all the restrictions, not enforcing mask mandates, things like that. And because of that, people say because of that, their cases are so high, their hospitals are getting full. That's what they're being accused of. And so the governor was trying to clarify that their hospitals are not necessarily as full as they're being portrayed, and he was trying to kind of clear up some of the misleading fact or
so
misleading
reporter asked what
messages
he thought was
coming
a dumb COVID question, and here's how DeSantis handled it.
Our hospitals are open for business. Like I said, Jackson, the COVID patients are half of what they were last year. Even in places that have more, COVID patients represent a fraction of the overall hospital beds. And so I don't want to see a repeat because of some of the media hysteria where people who have heart problems or stroke are not going in to get care. That happened in March of 2020 and in April. There was a huge decline in people who would show up to the ED. Literally, people are having heart attacks at home because they thought that there weren't either not enough room in the hospital or they thought that they would get COVID and die as a result of that. So we don't want to follow that. People should be good. You should go. And then I would say just the broader part, something wrong. And that's just not the way you do it. When people come in, you treat them. You know, we obviously have some people that are not vaccinated that have been admitted to hospitals. Are you going to sit there and criticize, or are we going to try to treat and try to help the folks?
Well,
you know, I'm just sick of this judge. I'm sick of the judgmental stuff on some of this stuff. Nobody's trying to get ill here. Okay, there's people that were hermits for a year and a half that wore six masks and did that and still contracted it. Okay. So let's just be real here, and let's not indulge these things that somehow it's their fault for not.
That man will be president someday. I loved how he handled that. And the reporter, she obviously had no clue, but the way she asked the question, wouldn't a mask have helped those poor children? I mean, you talk about being in a straightforward, objective journalist. There you go, right there. All right, hey, Sean, could you provide me with some Offspring? No, not the band. They wanted to have a couple of kids.
Oh, right. Yeah. Sure. I'd have to get a uterus first, though.
Well, I'd have to get a reversal. Okay. Of the V. Okay, we'll just deal with the band then. Pete Parada, the drummer for the widely popular band The Offspring, has announced that his bandmates have told him to step back from the band because Pete does not want to get the COVID-19 vaccine. In a social media announcement this week, Parada proclaimed that he suffers from a medical condition that would reportedly put him at risk if he were to receive the coronavirus shot. And so he said, my doctors have told me that my medical condition, I should not get the vaccine. But his bandmates have kicked him out of the band because they say, no, you must get vaccinated despite what your doctor advises you. That the band members somehow know what's better for their drummer than his doctor does. And so he said that band members decided he's unsafe to be around. I'm telling you, all these lies that are being told by politicians and many people in the media about what's going on, it's driving people crazy. I know you noted a story last week, Nicole. We never ended up talking about it. But didn't a woman down at Pike Place Market pepper spray a little kid because he didn't have a mask on?
Yes, the mom and kid. Mm-hmm.
And you said, when you saw that story and you sent me a note, and you said seriously, all this nonsense, all these lies that are being peddled is seriously messing up some people's brains, that this woman could, you know, turn pepper spray on a little kid who's unmasked in an outdoor space at the Pike Place Market.
She wouldn't have done something pre-COVID like that to a child and even an adult who just goes around pepper spraying people.
Yeah. Just crazy. All right, next up in the Fastest 15, and then there's poor Joe Biden. One of the things that's really difficult is a sequence. If you are suffering from early onset of dementia, and I do know this because my mom, my father-in-law, we had to watch the slow goodbye, the long goodbye with both of them. But one of the first things that goes is if you see numbers and letters together, it's very hard for the brain, when the brain starts to struggle, it's very hard for the brain to process a sequence of numbers or letters. And Joe Biden, he was trying to talk about the AANHPI community, which, honestly, I'd never heard of. It's Asian American, Native American, and Pacific Islander. AANHPI.
The AANH and PI community. I stumble over myself here. But
He does stumble over himself there. And then finally, in the Fastest 15, Donald Trump has gone after a Seattle athlete. Megan Rapinoe, soccer player, wife of Seattle Storm Sue Bird. Donald Trump, on a post on his website, he sent out this statement, since he doesn't have Twitter anymore. If our soccer team, headed by a radical group of leftist maniacs, wasn't woke, they would have won the gold medal instead of the bronze. Woke means you lose. Everything that is woke goes bad, and our soccer team certainly has. There were, however, a few patriots standing. Unfortunately, they need more than that, respecting our country and national anthem. They should replace the wokesters with patriots and start winning again. The woman with the purple hair played terribly and spends too much time thinking about radical left politics and not doing her job. Megan Rapinoe, you've just been trumped. And that is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast. Dory's Fastest 15.
Because 15 minutes will give you the world. I'm really looking forward to this. Victor Davis Hanson, senior fellow at the Hoover Institution. He's been talking a lot about what's going on at the border, but we're going to tie it together with what's happening here in the Seattle area. He's going to spend the full half hour with us, coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show. Well, I've been doing this talk show for 26 years in the city where I was born and raised, and I never dreamed possible that Seattle could look the way it does today, with homelessness everywhere, drugs are legal. The problems, crime rate has gone through the roof. I want to turn to one of the finest minds around, Dr. Victor Davis Hanson. He's a fellow at the Hoover Institution, and he joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Dr. Hanson, great to talk to you, sir. Thanks for coming on with me today.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So I know you look at a lot of national issues, but you know, just quickly, what's happening here in Seattle? We have a wide open southern border in America, and that means that drugs are pouring across the border along with the illegal aliens. The drugs are coming right up I-5. They're landing in Seattle because King County, our prosecutor, has legalized personal possession amounts of all drugs, including heroin and meth. And we're seeing the destruction now of a great city. Why do you think these things are happening? What are the forces? We have a couple of open Marxists on our city council. What are the forces that are allowing we the people to let politicians do what they're doing to us?
Well, I think that you have to look at it as long-term and short-term. I think everybody realizes that in Rahm Emanuel, never let a crisis go to waste. Or in fact, that was resonated with similar statements from Hillary Clinton and Gavin Newsom and Barack Obama during the crisis. But when you take 330 million people and they're confronted with a gain of function man-made virus, and then they go into a national lockdown, and then they go into a self-induced recession, and then you have an election year with 100 million mail ballots. We've never had that before that were not cast on election day. And then you have the George Floyd 120 days of rioting. Then people are going to go a little crazy, and what had become abnormal and unthinkable became acceptable. But that said, other countries didn't quite freak out like we did.
Right.
So there were precursors. And one of the precursors was, for a long time, the university, all of these things that you've mentioned had been staples in the university, but they, I think during the Obama administration from 2009 to 16, we began to see critical legal theory, critical theory in general, political racial theory come into its own and be mainstream. Obama did one thing that was people didn't appreciate at the time, but he redefined race as not a binary between black and white, but he took this old word and rebranded diversity. And he said, basically, that class doesn't matter. It's not just 10% who have grievances because of race. It's 30%. Mm-hmm. It's Latinos. It's Asians. It was the old Rainbow Coalition idea of Jesse Jackson, but he gave it new life. And it was kind of ridiculous. You could be a multimillionaire from India. You could be Meghan Markle. You could be Oprah. You could be LeBron. But you all have something in common, that you were not white. And that was the first time we'd really seen this term whiteness and white and non-white used in such a disruptive fashion. And then there was the Donald Trump phenomenon, the Make America Great movement, that said, you know what? We're not, we being the conservatives or Republicans, said we're not going to lose noble anymore. We're going to win ugly if we have to. We're not going to play by the Mitt Romney or John McCain, Marcus of Queensbury rules. So they deliberately wanted somebody to attack, and then not react. You put all of that together, and I think we're now in a period in which the left knows that every one of these signature issues, open borders, critical race theory, defunding the police, identity politics, the New Green Deal, they do not have 51% support, but they want to push these through.
Right.
Because never in their wild imagination did they think they would take the Senate and win have two socialists win in Georgia, of all places. But they did. And they feel they have about 18 months left, and they're going to do everything in their power to get that border open, get 2 million people across it this year, get 2 million people across it next year, try to keep hammering away at the filibuster, get in new states, get rid of the Electoral College, pack that court, because they know that they're probably going to lose the midterm election.
Well, you made a great point last week about the open borders, that Donald Trump got impeached over a bad phone call. Here you have Joe Biden, or whoever is pulling Joe Biden's strings. They've opened up the border. We do have, you know, tens of thousands, millions. They tell all of us we have to mask up and get vaccinations, but we have a lot of unvaxxed, unmasked people streaming across the border. And you ask the question, what do we do about a president who refuses to follow the law? Here in Washington, our governor, Jay Inslee, has declared us to be a sanctuary state. So a lot of the illegal aliens are ending up here in Washington. What do we do about when they've got both the House and the Senate, when you have a president who refuses to follow the law?
Well, you can see where this is leading. We have 550 sanctuary states, counties, or cities. And it's kind of a neo-Confederate idea that they are going to nullify the federal government. That's what San Francisco does. That's where I am in Fresno County, California. And they essentially say that federal immigration law does not apply anymore. And the federal government allowed that. Donald Trump tried to stop it, but he was unable to. The courts here in California threw it out. He said, you know, you have no jurisdiction over Yosemite. That is a federal park. And they said, yes, but we have state roads leading up to it. And so he was not able to say, you know, you can't do this and can't do that during a lockdown. So that's going to set a model it already has. So now people on the conservative side are saying, you know what? This is a sanctuary city, but with a twist. We are not defying federal law. We're defying state law to uphold federal law. And in our county, and we have some in California, we're going to do things like uphold federal immigration law. Counties in Texas want to help build a wall. Or they're going to say, we're going to protect the Second Amendment. And within our jurisdiction, we're not going to require particular federal executive orders that, that limit the access to firearms. And you can see where it's going to go. Pretty soon people are going to say, we're going to say, do the same thing with the Endangered Species Act, et cetera. And when that starts to happen, we're on the road to a sectarian war, because then people will follow the next stage, as we saw in the Civil War. Then suddenly the federal government says, wait a minute, we own federal property in the states that you have no jurisdiction over. Then what happens?
A sectarian war. That's really interesting, because I was talking about that a lot last hour on this show. Victor Davis Hanson, he's a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, and he has agreed to spend the entire half hour with us. So hold on, Victor. We will continue the conversation in just a moment as the Dory Monson Show rolls on. The Dory Monson Show rolls on. Continuing our conversation with Victor Davis Hanson, senior fellow at the Hoover Institution. And as we talk about all of these issues that I discussed last hour, that you've been talking about for the last 15 minutes, aren't we headed for anarchy? Because, you know, when Jay Inslee shut down restaurants in our state, I had a couple of the restaurant owners who defied his executive order. And the state of Washington, this one guy's 80 years old. He'd run a restaurant for 50 years. And the state of Washington fined him $155,000. And they said it was not reviewable. And this poor guy, you know, like I said, 50 years, beloved philanthropy. And Jay Inslee said, people cannot pick and choose which laws they're going to follow. But when you have a governor who says we're a sanctuary state, when you have a governor and an attorney general who pick and choose what laws they're not going to follow, then the citizens clearly are going to take the same approach. And then we're on the way to anarchy, aren't we?
I think we're there already.
Yeah,
we're already picking and choosing. There is no consistent principle. That's why everybody's so angry at the quarantine. Javier Becerra, our HHS secretary, said that he would be willing to go door to door to roust out Americans to get vaccinated, while 2 million people are walking across the southern border with no vaccination requirement and no testing requirement, while people in Canada, the border is virtually closed. So they don't have a consistent policy. They do have a consistent ideology, and whatever they feel is necessary for their progressive aims to be achieved, that particular means is sanctified. It's okay. That's why they're so paradoxical about the border enforcement. That's why they're so that vaccinations. And why are they so empowered when they do not have 51%? I thought a lot about that, but if you think very closely, they control now all of the major institutions of thought and communications and power in the United States. So
yeah,
the corporations, Coca-Cola, Delta, American Airlines, they're woke. They can weigh in on voting laws. The Wall Street grandees are woke. The corporate boardrooms are woke. The professional sports are woke. Hollywood is woke. Entertainment in general is woke. K-12 is woke. The media is woke. The media of Silicon Valley, the universities are woke. And even though they don't comprise the majority of the population, they have enormous ways of influence how our children are educated, what are young people learn in college, what's expected of you when you go out on the job, everything from, and remember another thing about wokeness, it's a psychological mechanism to avoid more serious questions. It's like the common source system in the Soviet Union. If you're the head of American Airlines and you can't even guarantee fuel for your planes, or if you're Delta and the waiting time is 7 hours to get help on your helpline about a missed flight or a canceled flight, then you go out and talk about Georgia's voting law or Texas voting law to ingratiate yourself with the powers that be. Right. Or if you're a general and you can't win a war, but you want to go on to Raytheon or General Dynamics when you retire, then you are woke and the left leaves you alone. And so that's what's happening. It's very self-interested in careers. I think a lot of people miss that point, that it's like the Soviet system was, or you know, places out anywhere where merit doesn't preside. Right. And it's an old, I don't want to say old boy network, it's an old woke network. And that's what we're seeing at all the universities where I'm employed. You see people come out of the woodwork that you never would expect, and suddenly they're proudly and loudly saying they're woke, but actually they're more interested in somebody else's job or advancement or promotion, right, or join the, or in fear that they'll be attacked. It's like woke insurance.
Well, it's amazing. When I was a little kid, the universities were the place for rebels, for free thinkers, for people to challenge authority. It's done a complete 180. You must conform. You must engage in groupthink, or else you will be ostracized. And that's an extension of what you're talking about. We're talking with Victor Davis Hanson, senior fellow at the Hoover Institution. So I want to finish with some note of light here. The one thing I've seen, Victor, is people are getting involved who never would have before. In the Seattle area, 10 of our local school districts have embraced critical race theory. They've codified it. But we have three districts where the school board has said, we will not allow critical race theory. I'm seeing people getting involved at the grassroots level, on school boards and in suburban city councils. And people are activated. We're not apathetic about what we're seeing all around us, but it does seem to be activating an awful lot of good people.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right about that. More people are speaking out, even people like Bill Maher are speaking out. Some of them are speaking out because they realize that the system can't continue as it is. And it's not just the woke. The wokeness is blended in or fused with open borders, rampant inflation, a general sense, defunding the police, that America is no longer safe, rational, affordable. And they say whatever's going on, it's not sustainable. And then there's other people who say, you can't deal with these people. We were liberals or we were independents. We thought they wouldn't come for us, but my son went to prep school or my daughter went to prep school. They got perfect grades. They got perfect SAT scores, but they didn't get into Harvard or Yale or Princeton or Stanford because suddenly there was a racial quota that was twice what it was the year before. Or somebody who said, you know, I moved to Portland or I moved to Seattle or I moved to Menlo Park or San Francisco and I got a really nice neighborhood. But you know what? Even here, there are needles on the sidewalk. There's human feces and excrement and the police will not enforce laws of vandalism or theft. So it's starting to reach the places where people who were left-wing or woke or liberal thought that it wouldn't, this general degeneration or erosion in civilization. And a lot of people, I think, are going to say, you know what, I may have hated Donald Trump. These are independents and left-wing, but this is out of control. And I don't know what to do, but I can't support it anymore. And I think that's just starting. I think that's why the Democrats are so paranoid right now, that they're trying to push as many people to get across that border as possible. They're trying to change laws from the vote, you know, from Electoral College to the Supreme Court composition, anything they can before the midterms, because they know this was a once in a lifetime opportunity of this panic and this crisis, and they want to take all of the advantage they can of it, but they know it's coming to a close with the midterm.
Yeah, I sure hope so. Victor Davis Hanson, Senior Fellow at the Hoover Institution, I've loved talking with you, and I appreciate you taking the time with me this afternoon.
Thank you.
All right. Victor Davis Hanson, love to hear your thoughts. You can text me at 98973, and we have lots more to come right after the news here on the Dory Monson Show.